fire so uselessly at me at Jamaron. They wanted to make sure the Grey Shrike survived so that there would be another witness to the battle.
What do you mean, fire uselessly? Aralani asked, frowning. Where did they learn that?
From Hoxium,
Syenda said.
They saw how Thrawn's gunners...
She broke off abruptly. But it was too late. Aralani looked up at Wutro, saw her expression echoing Aralani's own surprise.
What did you just say? Aralani asked. Senior Captain Syenda, what did you just say?
My apologies, Admiral,
Syenda said, her voice under rigid control.
I misspoke.
Yes, that can happen, Senior Captain, Aralani said. Nevertheless, I'd like you to finish your sentence.
Admiral, I really can't...
All right, I'm back.
O'Keefe's brisk voice came from the chair speaker.
You reach any conclusions?
Again, Aralani looked at Wutro. The first officer gave an uncertain shrug and a rather helpless gesture.
Nothing but the obvious ones,
Aralani said, turning back to the mic.
The battle dreadnought aliens were apparently at Hoxim and used their recordings to create duplicates of one of the Aragorn patrol ships at that battle.
Probably duplicated some of the others as well,
Bakeef said.
Though it was probably less duplication than camouflage. Unfortunately, the self-destructs of the Jamiron attackers left very little that could be identified. We'll continue checking for genetic material and metal profiles, but that will take time.
Roscoe said it would only be another few days, Aralani murmured.
Yes, she did,
Bakeef said grimly.
At any rate, I've just taken a look at the Orison's travel since Jixtus first arrived at Avetich. Captain Roscoe's journey began with her checking all the Klar strongholds and other major manufacturing, farming, and distribution centers.
Reasonable enough, under the circumstances, Aralani said.
True,
Bakeef said.
But in the last few days, her focus has widened a bit. She's now also checking systems where the Dasklo family has major shipbuilding and refurbishing centers.
Uh-oh, Utro said under her breath.
She's trying to catch them in the act.
That's my assumption,
Bakeef said.
She has just one left. Crowling Sen on Orntra.
Aralani felt her throat tighten. Not just the premier Dasklo shipbuilding facility, but also the center of their space travel research and development department. They would not take kindly to someone poking around, demanding answers. Especially a Klar like Roscoe, who so plainly suspected them of violence against her family's interests.
I don't think that's going to end well, sir,
she warned.
Agreed,
Bakeef said.
But as long as she's just flying around the Ascendancy, looking and talking, she's not violating any laws or protocols.
Even if she starts pushing against the Dasklo?
As long as it remains verbal, there's nothing we can do to hinder her activities,
Bakeef said.
If someone starts shooting on either side, then the Syndicure and Defense Force can get involved.
Only by then it'll be too late,
Wutro muttered.
Very possibly, Aralani said. We need someone to intercept her at Orntra before she crosses the line and talk her down.
May not be possible, but it can't hurt to try,
Bakeef said.
Senior Captain Syenda?
Sir?
Syenda said, sounding a bit startled at being called on. Small wonder. After that mysterious, choked-off comment about Thrawn's gunners, she'd stayed totally silent, probably hoping she would be forgotten in the crush of more important business. Small wonder. Even smaller chance. As far as Aralani was concerned, any such hopes and efforts were a waste of time.
I I'm issuing you new orders,
O'Keefe told her.
You'll go to Ornfra, wait there until Captain Roscoe arrives, and do whatever you can to defuse the situation.
Yes, sir, Sayenda said. I'll point out, Supreme General, that she doesn't trust me. As a member of the Arisi family, she considers me to be her enemy.
Frankly, I doubt she trusts anyone at this point,
O'Keefe said.
Regardless, you're the only one I can spare right now. If Roscoe follows her usual pattern, she'll remain in Spacia orbit another few hours, consulting with the Klar leadership before she leaves for Ornfra. Make sure you're there ahead of her.
Yes, sir,
Sayenda said.
As for you, Admiral Aurelani,
O'Keefe continued,
you'll turn over command of the Vigilant to Senior Captain Wutro and prepare a shuttle for Chila. Your meeting request has been approved.
Aurelani stiffened. Understood, sir, she said through suddenly dry lips.
I'll leave as soon as I can.
I'll be waiting,
O'Keefe said.
Senior Captain Wutro, watch yourself and Spacia very carefully. There's no reason to believe Jixtus knows about the UAG or the items stored there. But since we don't know the full extent of his conversations with Patriarch Rivlex, I don't want to take any chances.
Understood, sir,
Wutro said.
We'll be ready for whatever anyone throws at us.
Good,
O'Keefe said.
I'll be in contact if and when there are further updates. Until then, you all have your orders. Good luck.
Aurelani keyed off her mic.
Junior Commander Larsium, close comm, she ordered. Then alert Senior Warrior Yopring to prep a shuttle for Chila. Full long-range crew. One passenger. Yes, Admiral.
Well, that was an interesting way to spend an hour,
Wutro said, as Aurelani picked up her questus and stood up.
Any further orders, Admiral?
Just the one Bakif already gave you,
Aurelani said.
Stay alert, and watch for trouble.
Oh, and if trouble does arrive,
squash it.
The simple orders are always the best.
Wutro cocked her head.
Speaking of not simple things, any thoughts as to what Zayinda meant by that Thrawn's gunner's comment?
Aurelani shook her head.
Aside from the fact that she really didn't want to talk about it, nothing at all.
I presume you're going to rectify that omission?
You presume correctly,
Aurelani assured her.
But not right now. We've got bigger problems than whatever connivance Thrawn might have pulled off at Hoxim. More important, Zayinda and Thrawn are two of our best and most trustworthy assets, and I have no interest in losing or weakening either of them.
Does that mean you're also not going to mention this to the Supreme General?
Aurelani hesitated. There were still things about Hoxim that no one knew, and that everyone wanted to know. More than that, there were things people like Bakif needed to know. Whatever scheme Thrawn had pulled off at Hoxim, it might be something that could be used in the future. But if the plan had required Thrawn to once again skate over the line, Bakif would be bound by the protocols to pass it on to the Council. And there were only so many times he could cover for Thrawn. Besides, it wasn't like Zayenda had actually said anything critical. There was certainly nothing in the protocols that required officers to pass on rumors or half-truths to their superiors.
Not right now, she told Wutro. We'll wait until we have more details, assuming we can get Zayenda to give those to us.
Understood,
Wutro said.
And speaking of things people don't want to talk about,
if you're asking about my meeting request to Supreme General Bakif, I didn't say anything about it to you because I assumed it would be denied,
Aurelani told her.
Now that it's been granted, I think it might be best to keep it quiet a little longer. At least until I get back from Chila.
Oh, I see,
Wutro said.
You know, there's an old saying that keeping secrets killed the whisker cub.
Arlani snorted.
There's no such saying. You just made that up.
Well, if there isn't one, there ought to be,
Wutro said.
Safe flight to you, Admiral.
She turned her head to look out the viewport at the Orison, now settling into orbit in the distance.
And hurry back,
she added.
I get the feeling we're going to need you. Probably sooner than later.
Memories 7.
The hyperspace swirl collapsed to star flares, and the Stibla patrol ship Jandalin arrived in its target system.
Destination confirmed, Senior 8,
the pilot reported.
Glustus 3.
Thrash looked up at the status display. Destination, in his opinion, was putting it far too generously.
Glustus 3 was little more than a flash-fly speck in infinite space. A single Defense Force emergency repair black dock orbiting a marginally habitable planet midway between Chila and Kopero in the south nadir part of the Ascendancy. The fact that not a single family in the Ascendancy had deemed the system worth developing suggested that marginally habitable was also something of an exaggeration. Senior Aide Lapinsick gestured to Thrawn, seated to the right of the center section on the curved acceleration couch that stretched across the back of the bridge.
Meet Commander, he invited.
Thras leaned forward to look past Lapinsick at Thrawn, noting the single-edged focus on Thrawn's face as his eyes flicked between the viewport and the displays. The center seat of the couch was reserved for the ship's master, Thras knew, with the seat on either side normally left empty. Only when the master deemed one of his companions or passengers worthy of special honor were those seats offered. Thrawn to Lapinsick's right, Thras to his left. Distantly, Thras wondered if Thrawn recognized the honor he'd been granted by being offered the right-hand seat. Given that it was Thrawn, probably not.
Thank you, Senior Aide,
Thrawn said.
Sensor officer, begin a scan of the outer system around us. We're looking for a dead Stibla cargo ship, a Vivan configuration.
Thras felt a fresh heaviness in his heart.
Dead.
He'd been afraid that would be where this would end up.
So, you think the hijackers killed them?
He forced himself to ask. Thrawn sent him a puzzled look.
Of course not, he said.
Didn't you read the files I gave you?
Most of them,
Thras said, feeling a bit defensive. Even for someone who dug through official documents for a living, the Klar legal text was mind-numbingly dry.
I was starting to fall asleep about an hour ago.
But you did get to the part about penalties due to blood who commit crimes against other families, didn't you?
Oh, yes,
Thras said, wincing. Those sections had been the exception to the dryness, switching from mind-numbing to blood-chilling.
I assumed there was some hyperbole involved.
There wasn't, Lapinsick assured him. A few centuries ago, the Ascendancy had such a problem with Klar raiders that several of the other families threatened to band together and obliterate the entire family. Those criminal statutes are the result, and the Klar guarantee that such atrocities will never happen again.
At least not for long,
Thrawn said.
I'd draw your attention in particular to the punishment for any death that results from a felony crime.
You mean the death by torture clause?
Yes, Thrawn said. What can you infer from that?
Thras gave a little snort. His first thought was that such a thing was utterly barbaric. His second was that the Klar must really have needed to reassure their neighbors if they felt the need to enact such laws in the first place. But it was clear from Thrawn's look of expectation that neither of those was what he was going for. So what did he want Thras to see? Thras turned to look out the viewport, scowling. Thrawn had already been disappointed at least twice since their arrival at Patriarch Lamiov's mansion by people's inability to follow his reasoning. The least Thras could do was give it a try. All right. Punishment. Death by torture. Klar raiders. A Defense Force Black Dock in an edge-of-nowhere system. A lonely system. Out of the way. With virtually zero chance that anyone would happen by. And then, he had it. The hijackers can't risk any of the Stibler crew dying, he said, turning back to Thrawn. But they also can't hold them aboard their ship, at least not for long.
Why not?
Because kidnapping from another family carries the same punishments as killing them.
Exactly, Thrawn said, the anticipation in his face replaced by approval. So why would they be here at Glastis 3?
They can't just park the crew out in space, Thras said. If they don't make it back in time after they make their deal, the crew will run out of air or food, and the hijackers will face full Klar law. But they also can't just turn them loose, because then the alarm will be given and they'll have the Defense Force and every family patrol ship in the region looking for them.
He gestured out the viewport.
So they find an empty system to park the cargo ship, where nobody's likely to stumble across them. But they also need a system that's not quite empty, so that there's someone they can call afterward to come out and rescue the crew when they've finished selling the stolen goods.
Very good, Thrawn said. One small addition. The hijackers won't want to risk calling or having any other direct contact with the Black Dock.
So they'll put the cargo ship in an elliptical orbit.
Lapin Sick spoke up suddenly.
Disable their drive and their comm, and put them in a long orbit that will take a few days to get close enough for the Black Dock to spot them.
That would work, Thras agreed. So simple, really, once it was explained.
Of course, that assumes the hijackers are smart enough to think of it.
They are, and they will,
Lapin Sick assured him.
300 years ago, the Klar defeated a numerically superior Irisi force using this exact maneuver to drift one of their warships in close. It was a Klar triumph, and a Blood will certainly be familiar with it.
As are you, obviously, Thras commented. A 300-year-old battle? You Stibler certainly keep up with things.
320, if we want to be precise. Lapin Sick said. As I once told you, we compensate for our lack of influence and successes by keeping track of everyone else's.
I remember, Thras said. So they're out here somewhere. How do we find them?
That would indeed be the next question, Thrawn said, pulling out his questus. There are a mathematical infinity of possible curves to choose from. And depending on how long they planned for the cargo ship to be incommunicado, the orbit could extend a considerable distance out into space.
Any chance the sensors on this ship are good enough to just brute strength find them? Thras asked.
Unfortunately, no, Lapin Sick said. This is a close-in patrol ship, and not designed for extensive survey work.
So, what's the plan?
Thras asked, watching Thrawn working at his questus.
Start looking and hope for the best?
Fortunately, many of those possible courses can be eliminated, Thrawn said. If they came from Sposia on the easiest course, They'll have arrived 12 degrees below the elliptical plane. They also won't have gone very far from their entry point, lest their drive emissions be spotted by the Black Dock crew. A Vivan cargo ship carries 3 weeks' worth of life support supplies, so they won't have set its course to bring it into the Black Dock's view any later than that.
What if they don't bother with any of this? Thras asked,
an unpleasant thought suddenly occurring to him.
What if they just dump them in deep space somewhere between stars? Without bodies, the car won't be able to prove there were any killings.
Not true, Lapinsick said.
Glar law specifies that if a person is missing for over a year, they can be presumed dead. If Patriarch Lamioff can prove to his satisfaction that this gang hijacked the Stibla ship, those missing crew would automatically add the further charge of murder.
So a 3 week drift at the most, Thrawn said. Probably no more than 2.
He made one final calculation, then tapped his Questus.
They should be within the region marked.
Thras looked at the overview display, now showing a hazy green region of space around them.
Still a lot of territory to look at.
Let's see if we can narrow it further, Thrawn said. Signorate Lapinsick, may I have control of the comm?
Give me comm control,
Lapinsick called to the bridge crew as he unfastened a mic from the bulkhead behind Thrawn's head and handed it to him.
What exactly do you have in mind?
The hijackers would, of course, have destroyed the cargo ship's transmitters, Thrawn said. But it's possible to convert a ship's electromagnetic sensor into a receiver. Let's see if the crew were clever enough to do so.
He keyed the mic.
Stibla cargo ship V-484. This is Stibla patrol ship Jandalin, under the command of Patriarch Senior Aide Lapinsick. We're looking for you, but there's a great deal of space to cover. If you can hear me, vent your aft oxygen reserves and the aft thruster fuel tanks and ignite the mixture. The resulting plume should help reveal your position.
He repeated the message 3 times, then keyed off the mic and handed it back to Lapinsick.
While we wait, Senior Aide, you should contact the Black Dock and alert them to our presence and the fact that they'll be called upon soon to tow in the damaged cargo ship.
We won't need their help, Lapinsick said. The Jandalin is fully capable of towing a cargo ship.
Capability is not the issue, Thrawn said. Once we've spoken to the cargo crew and learned where the hijackers have gone, we'll need to head out immediately if we hope to intercept them.
You really think they told the cargo crew where they were going?
Thras asked.
Oh, I'm certain they didn't, Thrawn said dryly. But perhaps they weren't as clever as they thought. Senior Aide?
Yes, Lapinsick said, sounding somewhat less than enthusiastic. I think perhaps we'll wait to alert the Black Dock until we have some solid evidence that the cargo ship...
There!
The sensor officer snapped, pointing out the viewport.
72 degrees to port side!
Thras felt a sense of relief wash over him. The distant plume of burning thruster fuel was small, but clearly visible against the blackness and unwavering starlight behind it. He looked at the sensor display, watching as the patrol ship's computer calculated the crippled ship's course and vector and overlaid them on the visual.
Helm, get us over to them,
Lapinsick ordered.
Best possible speed and course for an intercept.
He sent a wry smile at Thrawn as he keyed his mic.
And now, meet Commander, I believe you suggested that I call the Black Dock?
They moved fast,
the cargo ship's captain said, his voice low and pained. He looked up at Lapinsick, sitting across from him, then quickly lowered his gaze back to the deck.
Much faster than we guessed they could. Before we even knew what was happening,
They were on the bridge and in the engine room, and were pumping gas through the entire ship.
Probably Tava missed, Thrawn commented absently from the side, most of his attention on his Questus. Harmless and relatively easy to obtain.
I don't know what it was,
the captain said, throwing a sideways look at Thrawn. He'd been doing a lot of that during his debriefing, Thras had noted, even while he was ostensibly talking to and being questioned by Lapinsick. Probably wondering why a Stibla senior official was having him go through such a humiliating failure and right on his own bridge in front of a pair of Myth.
When our minds finally cleared, we were prisoners, and the hijackers were transferring our cargo to their own vessel.
Did they transfer all of it? Lapinsick asked. Every crate?
Every crate,
the captain said tiredly.
They took all 50 hours of our journey here. It was only once they'd left that we discovered they disabled our thrusters, hyperdrive, and transmitters.
How long ago since they left?
Thrawn asked. The captain sent him another sideways look, definitely resentful at having a couple of non-Stibla present, Thras decided.
27 hours,
he said.
We had just barely cobbled together our receiver when you signaled.
Lapinsick looked at Thras.
Your thoughts, Syndic?
I don't know, Thras said.
The cargo ship's captain's dubious expression, he noted, had now been transferred from Thrawn to him. Not just a non-family military officer, but a non-family syndic as well. There were probably more humiliating combinations for a simple working person, but offhand, Thras couldn't think of any.
They're over a day ahead of us, and we still don't know where they're headed.
On the contrary, Thrawn said calmly. I believe I know exactly which planet they're going to.
He stopped, raising his eyebrows at Lapinsick. The other took the cue.
Thank you, Captain, he said, gesturing to the other Stibla. You may return to your cabin. A Defense Force ship is on its way to tow you to the Black Dock and begin repairs.
I obey, Senior Aide,
the captain said, standing up. He bowed deeply to Lapinsick, gave tentative and abbreviated versions of the bow to Thrawn and Thras, and left the bridge. The hatch closed behind him, and Lapinsick turned to Thrawn.
Explain, he said.
The hijackers are going to a planet designated as Plecnok, Thrawn said. It's about 52 hours...
No, not just the final answer, Lapinsick interrupted. I want the full explanation, if you please.
Thrawn shot a look at Thras, then gave a small shrug.
The placement and orbit of the cargo ship would have brought it into sensor range of the Black Dock approximately 7 days from the hijacker's departure, he said. That means 7 days before the alarm goes out. Those same 7 days are all the time they have to travel to the trading planet, sell the stolen goods, and return to their base in the Ascendancy. If we assume 1 day to meet the traders, arrange a deal, and offload the goods, that leaves 6.
So 3 days there and 3 days back? Thras suggested.
More likely 2 there and 4 back, Thrawn said. They want a buffer to make sure their ship is on the ground and out of sight before any search begins. But 3 is definitely the upper limit.
He handed his Questus to Lapinsick.
There are several areas of the Chaos beyond Glastis 3 that are particularly difficult to traverse. Most travelers avoid them, which makes them ideal for clandestine criminal activity. If we limit our search to 3 days' travel time from here, the marked section is the only one in range. There are no developed worlds or systems in there, and only one marginally habitable planet.
If they're doing all their business in orbit, the world below them doesn't have to be habitable,
Lapinsick pointed out as he studied the Questus.
Agreed, Thrawn said. But if it comes to a choice, most people prefer to have somewhere nearby as an emergency retreat. A world with water and oxygen atmosphere can make a crucial difference if repairs are needed, or one is forced to go into hiding.
We'll have to hope the hijackers and their friends feel that same way,
Lapinsick said.
So Plecnok, you say?
He frowned.
Plecnok. Why does that name sound familiar?
You've demonstrated considerable knowledge of ancient battles, Senior Aide, Thrawn said. Focus your memory on more recent conflicts. Say, 19 years ago.
For a long moment, Lapinsick stared at the Questus. Surreptitiously, Thras slid out his own Questus and punched in the relevant date and planet name. Lapinsick got there first.
Of course, he said. The Boadil group was in the system studying it for possible development when it was attacked by a pair of Patatas warships.
The survey ship was damaged, but was able to escape back to the Ascendancy. The Defense Force sent out a response, found the Patatas doing their own survey, and beat them soundly enough that they never came back.
Haven't come back yet,
Thrawn corrected.
But treaties, agreements, and even painfully learned lessons only stay with the Patatas for that single generation.
I didn't know that about the Patatas,
Thras said, frowning.
Is that new?
The theory is at least 100 years old,
Thrawn said,
though most of the Council in Syndicure reject it. But I've studied the record and the pattern, and I personally have no doubts.
Interesting,
Thras said.
So how long is a Patatas generation?
It's usually assumed to be between 17 and 25 years,
Thrawn said. Lapinsick looked up sharply.
That deciding battle was 19 years ago.
Indeed, Thrawn said. Whether today or at some future date, I believe the criminals who've been using Plecnok as a rendezvous point will discover to their dismay that the Patatas once again consider that world theirs. I suggest, Senior Aide, that...
But Lapinsick was no longer listening. Tossing Thrawn's Questus back into his lap, he snatched out his comm.
Captain, this is Senior Aide Lapinsick, he snapped, standing up and striding toward the hatch. I'm invoking emergency protocols. The Jandalan is to be ready to fly in 5 minutes.
What is it?
Thras demanded, as he and Thrawn also stood.
Senior Aide?
Hurry, or be left behind, was all Lapinsick said over his shoulder.
Picking up his pace, he slapped the hatch control and disappeared through the opening.
Thrawn?
Thras asked as they hurried to catch up.
I don't know,
Thrawn told him.
I knew the situation was bad, but I didn't realize it was this bad. Come, let's see what we can find out.
Chapter 12. Early on in the Springhawk's mad dash to sunrise, Simakro had realized that, as far as Skywalker Chiri was concerned, there were only three possible outcomes. The first and best was that Chiri would succeed. Given the fatigue the girl was still shouldering from their previous and equally mad rush to Rapak, he didn't hold out much hope for that one. The second possibility was that her brain and body would simply give up somewhere along the way and send her into a deep sleep from which she couldn't be roused until it was too late to intervene in whatever Thrawn and the Pakosh had planned. That one
in Simacro's opinion, was the most likely result. And then there was the third option, the possibility that Chiri would push herself so hard that she blew past all normal points of physical shutdown and collapsed into some form of psychotic dysfunction. That one would be disastrous, and not just for Chiri, even though the medics would probably be able to cure her once the Springhawk limped back to Naperar. He and Thalias would then be dumped straight into the career-ending scenario he'd warned her about before she and Chiri agreed to this madness. Simacro had no way of knowing what the odds were on that one. Frankly, he was afraid to even research it. Still, as the hours and days crept by, the plan seemed to be working. Chiri continued to guide the ship through the chaos on the course as Morty had worked out for her, taking her breaks when protocol required them, eating meals when she was hungry or when Thalias insisted, and sleeping the 4 hours per day that Simacro had calculated was the most he could allow her. At every break, Simacro checked the Springhawk's progress and confirmed it was on course. And during Chiri's brief sleep periods, as Morty or one of the other pilots continued the ship's progress via jump by jump. And finally, to Simacro's relief and mild surprise, they were there.
"One more short jump to go, Mid-Captain," as Morty reported, offering his Questus to Simacro. "I can handle it if you want to let Skywalker Chiri get some sleep."
"She definitely needs it,"
Simacro said, checking the data on the Questus and confirming that the Springhawk was situated correctly for their arrival at sunrise. The single jump, as Morty had specified, he noted, would only take about 5 minutes.
"Go set it up," he said, handing back the Questus. "I'll tell her she's done."
Chiri was at the desk in the duty office, just finishing the last couple of bites of the meat-striped fruit squares she'd requested for today's lunch. Thalias was standing over her, ready to take the empty plate and holding a fresh juice box ready. Both of them looked over as Simacro came in.
"How are you two doing?"
he asked as he walked over to them.
"I think we're okay," Thalias said. "Chiri?"
"I'm fine,"
the girl said.
"Are we ready to go?"
"We're ready to go," Simacro corrected. "You're ready to go get some sleep."
"No,"
Chiri said, shaking her head.
"Not yet. I need to finish it."
"You're as finished as you need to be," Simacro said firmly. "It's a single 5-minute hop, then an in-system jump, and we'll be there. Lieutenant Commander Asmordi can handle it with his eyes closed."
"No, Chiri's right," Thalias said. "She needs to do it. The timing, she needs to do it. That's all."
"Does she now?"
Simacro said, peering closely at them. Chiri's eyelids were drooping, and her face looked gaunt and a little pale. But aside from that, she seemed bright-eyed and alert. Way too alert, actually, for someone who'd had as little sleep as she had over the past few days.
"Bright-eyed. Finish your lunch and we'll discuss it," Simacro said. "Caregiver, I'd like a word with you outside, if I may."
"Certainly,"
Thalias said, handing Chiri the juice box.
"Drink a little more juice, Chiri. I'll be back in a minute."
A fully crewed bridge wasn't the ideal place for a private conversation, but right now, it was more important that Chiri be out of this particular conversation.
"All right,"
Simacro said in a low voice as the office hatch slid shut behind them.
"Let's hear it."
"Hear what?"
Thalias asked.
"You know what,"
Simacro growled.
"Chiri is way more alert than she ought to be after the run she just had. Is this the Magus playing more brain games?"
I don't know.
Thalia said tiredly, rubbing her eyes.
Chiri is... She wants to finish the job, Mid-Captain. That's all. She needs to finish the job.
Why? Simacro countered. We're here. The job's done. What else does the Magus want her to do?
I don't know, Thalia said again. She won't tell me. Maybe she doesn't know herself.
Not good enough, caregiver, Simacro said, shaking his head. I need answers.
He eyed her closely.
Or I'll take speculation, if that's all you've got.
I don't know if I've got anything even that solid.
Thalius exhaled a long, painful-sounding breath.
As best I can figure, the mages can... I don't know, see or know things that are going to happen.
Simacro felt a tingle at the back of his neck. The Magus affecting the Springhawk Skywalker from light years away was bad enough. But if she was also manipulating the girl toward the future and things that hadn't even happened yet, that would be far worse.
That's absurd, he said.
Maybe,
Thalius admitted.
Probably, even. And no, I don't have any proof that that's what's happening. But think about it. Isn't seeing into the future exactly what Skywalkers do?
That's different, Simacro insisted. Skywalkers can only see ahead a few seconds, and only events like hyperspace bumps that are governed solely by physics. You're talking, what, hours, days? And all of it involving people doing things and making their own decisions. How is that even possible?
I don't know, Thalia said. But I keep thinking about how we got to Rapak just in time to keep the Kilji warships from attacking and kidnapping the Magus' people. The only reason we got there when we did was because Chiri was having terrible nightmares.
It's still not possible, Simacro said.
But what if it was? Because he had to concede that there was a certain logic to it. The Magus was carrying the burden of responsibility for her refugees, and had a connection to something she called the Beyond.
Chiri was a Skywalker, with the ability to use third sight to see a few seconds into the future.
The Magus needed to protect her people and her world. Chiri was close to Thrawn, whom the Magus had now proclaimed to be her people's guardian. Could the two of them somehow be mixing those emotional connections and combining their individual abilities?
Fine, he said. I still don't believe it, but I'm willing to be convinced. Go check with Chiri. If she still thinks she can handle the approach, have her report to the nav station.
He leveled a finger at her.
If you think she's too fatigued, in fact, if there's any doubt at all in your mind, you take her back to the suite right now and put her to bed. Clear?
Yes, sir, Thalia said. Thank you.
She opened the office hatch and disappeared inside. Simacro stood still another moment, then returned to his command chair. He was checking the Springhawk's combat status when Thalius and Chiri returned to the bridge and crossed to the nav station. The girl was a little unsteady on her feet, Simacro noted, but otherwise seemed all right. As Morty turned and looked at Simacro, his eyebrows raised in silent question. Simacro answered with a nod, as Morty nodded back and keyed flight control over to the Skywalker station. 2 minutes later, with Chiri once again in third sight, the Springhawk was in hyperspace. 5 minutes after that, they arrived in the Sunrise system.
Sensors full scan, Simacro ordered. Lieutenant Commander Asmorty, locate the planet.
Combat range clear,
Dalvo reported from the sensor station.
Mid-range clear. Far range clear.
Sunrise located, Mid-Captain, Asmorty added. Computing in-system jump.
No!
Thalias said in a quavering voice.
Not yet!
Asmorty turned a frown towards the macro.
Mid-Captain? He asked.
A moment, Lieutenant Commander,
Simacro said, watching as Thalias bent down and held a whispered conversation with Chiri. He waited until she straightened and turned to him.
You have an explanation, caregiver?
He asked.
She says we can't go closer, Mid-Captain, Thalias said. I mean, we shouldn't go closer. It's not time yet.
Any thoughts on when it will be time?
Again, Thalias leaned over for a couple of seconds, talking to the girl half hidden in the navigator's chair.
We'll know, sir,
Thalias said. Her lip twitched.
She'll know.
For a moment, the bridge was silent.
Very well, Simacro said. We'll hold here for now. Senior Commander Afpraya, confirm that all weapon systems and crews are ready.
Yes, sir.
The normal bridge conversation resumed, though at a more subdued level than usual. Simacro checked the status boards, did quick evaluations of his bridge crew, and did all the other things a Chiss commander was supposed to do when preparing for action. But mostly, he watched Thalias, standing rigidly behind Chiri's seat. If the caregiver even looked like she was falling asleep on her feet, he would have both of them summarily hauled back to their suite and tossed into their beds. In fact, that might be the best thing to do, whether they were half asleep or not, because Thalias clearly hadn't thought this through. The Magus hadn't had these exaggerated third sight abilities when she first came aboard the Springhawk. There were too many things back then that had taken her by surprise. Too many decisions she would surely have adjusted or revoked if she'd been able to see even an hour into the future. It was only after she'd been in hibernation, in the Skywalker suite, in Chiri's proximity for several weeks, that this connection had happened. Normal logic might not work here, but Simacro assumed there was a fair chance that connection would likewise fade once the two of them had been apart for a similar length of time. The Magus had had her first success with the Rapak intervention. Now, if things worked out the way Chiri and Thalias clearly expected them to, the alien was about to garner herself a second. Two triumphs in a row should be ample confirmation that she now possessed an awesome and incredibly useful power. What if she decided she didn't want to give up that power?
Skywalkers are the key to our entire mission statement,
Simacro had once told Thalias.
We need to protect that resource as much as we can.
And he would. Against any force or manipulation that might come against her. Whatever the cost. With one last touch of the Great Presence, Kilori brought the Alos out of hyperspace. They had arrived at the system Thrawn had designated, the one he called Sunrise, the one the other Pathfinder had arrived in a few hours ago. At least they'd proved that Thrawn's guess as to the hammer's destination was correct. The Pakosh were ready. All of them were outfitted in heavy commando fighting suits, encased from the tops of their heads to their splay-toed feet, though their feathery headcrests were curiously left uncovered. Thrawn was similarly dressed for the occasion, wearing an armored version of the usual Chiss military uniform. And Kilori still had no idea what exactly was going on. One thing he did know, though, In his time as a Pathfinder, he'd seen hundreds of different planets. He'd seen major worlds, minor ones, worlds that held nothing but mining colonies, worlds that were all but uninhabited. This world was different. This world had been utterly devastated. The evidence was everywhere he looked. The clouds on the sunlit side were laced with the gray and black of smoke or blast debris. The strips of land visible beneath them were charred, with mere patches of fading green or the muted glitter of contaminated rivers and small lakes. He could see no city or travel lights at all on the night side. And Thrawn, who'd clearly already seen the catastrophic panorama now stretched out in front of them, had chosen to call the place Sunrise?
"Are they there?"
Wingali demanded, looming suddenly over Kilori like an angry storm cloud as he gazed out the bridge viewport. He turned slightly, the massive weapon holstered at his hip, coming uncomfortably close to the side of Kilori's head.
"Pilot? There!"
one of the other Pakosh announced from his station.
"Two ships, alien design, in a low synchronized planetary orbit."
Kilori leaned a little forward, trying to see what the alien was pointing to. It was no use. His eyes weren't good enough to even pick up the dot that should be all that was visible at this distance.
"Why are they so far away?"
"We arrived farther out than planned," the pilot said.
"Is this your doing, Pathfinder?"
Wingali demanded, an edge of suspicion coloring his voice.
"It wasn't my choice,"
Kilori protested, his winglets going flat.
"This area of hyperspace is unusually difficult to navigate. I did the best I could to follow your directive."
"Yet you didn't succeed."
"I did the best I could,"
Kilori repeated.
"It's all right, Wingali Foa Maoksa," Thrawn said from the rear of the bridge. "Navigation is indeed difficult here."
"It is from those united with the beyond."
The alien voice that Kilori had heard once before came from somewhere near Thrawn.
"They seek to protect their world from invaders."
"They didn't stop the Kilji, who arrived before us,"
Kilori pointed out.
"The invaders faced their own difficulty," the Magus said. "They succeeded only through the same effort as your Pathfinder."
"That may be as it is," Wingali said. "The plan remains?"
"It remains," Thrawn confirmed.
Wingali made a rumbling noise.
"Pilot, show us the targets."
"Yes, Commander."
One of the displays at the station next to Kilori lit up, showing a magnified view of the planetary edge and the two warships. He felt his cheek winglets twitch. One of the two ships was a Kilji picket cruiser, undoubtedly the Hammer. The other was larger, similar in size to the Kilji battlecruiser Anvil, the ship Kilori had barely escaped from at Rapak. But its appearance was notably different from that of either of the Kilji's. A Grisk warship, maybe? That could be very bad. Jixtus didn't talk about his own warships much, but from the bits and pieces Kilori had put together, it sounded like they were large, well-armed, and extremely formidable. On Wingali's side, in contrast, was a single Nicardoon blockade frigate and a relative handful of Pakian commandos. Plus they had Thrawn, who'd engineered the Nicardoon defeat at Primea, and who'd then plucked General Yiv straight off his own flagship. Whatever happened, it would probably be inventive and deadly. And Kilori, a simple Pathfinder, was stuck squarely in the middle.
Senior Captain Thrawn?
Weimgali invited.
One is the ship that escaped from Rapark, Thrawn said. The other is of the same design of the battle dreadnought that Chiss fought here a few weeks ago. He paused. And which we then destroyed. Kiloria Vuandualon. Confirmation, if you please.
Yes, that's the Kilji picket cruiser hammer,
Kilori said. There was clearly no point in lying or trying to confuse the issue.
I have no information on the other ship.
Is the Pathfinder you were following still aboard the hammer?
Yes,
Kilori said.
If you want, I can call and ask to speak.
He broke off as the Aelos leapt forward, the compensators responding with just enough delay to give the occupants a brief wave of acceleration.
Emergency!
Weimgali shouted from right behind him.
What is it?
Kilori gasped, cringing in his seat.
What's happening?
We are the Nicardoon warship Aelos, requesting emergency assistance from the Kilji picket cruiser Hammer!
Weimgali continued in the same bellowing voice.
Our weapons and defenses are damaged, and a Chiss warship is in pursuit. We request safe haven and protection until we can make repairs.
He stopped, and for a long moment, the bridge was silent.
Again, Thrawn said quietly.
Emergency!
Weimgali roared again.
We are the Nicardoon warship!
Nicardoon, how did you find this place?
A stiff voice spat from the bridge speaker.
We are in need of assistance!
Weimgali began again.
How did you find this place?
The voice interrupted.
You have no purpose here.
We rescued the Pathfinder Navigator from the Anvil,
Weimgali said.
It was he who guided us here.
You lie,
the voice accused.
Neither Pathfinder was told in advance of this world.
Kilori's winglets stiffened as he looked furtively over his shoulder at Thrawn, standing silently beside Weimgali. The Pathfinder's ability to sense and follow each other in hyperspace was the Navigators Guild's deepest and most dangerous secret, one that Thrawn had assured Kilori he would keep to himself. If he and Weimgali were about to shred the wall the Guild had so carefully built around it, the results could be disastrous.
The Pathfinder told me that his Kilji captain spoke secrets when he shouldn't have,
Weimgali said.
A mistake we of the Nicardoon would never make.
You don't think much of our Kilji allies, then?
Kilori winced. He'd already been thinking that didn't sound like a Kilji voice. But now, with this new layer of arrogance, he realized how much it reminded him of Jixtus. Which strongly implied that was indeed a Grisk warship keeping station with the hammer. He looked again at the magnified image on the nearby display. The only Grisk ship he'd ever seen up close was Jixtus's personal transport, and this vessel didn't look anything like that. Or at least, it didn't look that way to him. Did Thrawn see it differently? He'd already identified it as akin to the battle dreadnought the Chiss had faced and destroyed. But did he realize those ships belonged to the Grisks?
I think very little of a captain that runs from battle,
Weimgali said contemptuously.
Leaving its fellowship and an ally to face the murderous Chiss alone. The other Kilji paid with its life. And we will do likewise soon, unless the three of us stand together.
I see no sign of any pursuit,
the voice said.
But you may approach, so that we can discuss your situation.
He paused.
And perhaps your true identity.
I look forward to our meeting,
Wingali said.
In the meantime, I urge you to prepare for combat. Whether or not you see pursuit, it is coming.
If you're lying, you will die slowly and in great pain,
the other said, his voice going cold.
But I greatly hope you are not. The Chiss have taken the lives of many of my people. It's time we balanced that scale.
Thalias was standing behind the nav station chair, drifting in and out of waking dreams, and wondering distantly when this would all be over, when Ciri suddenly gasped.
What is it?
Thalias asked sharply, snapping fully awake.
Ciri? They're here, Ciri said.
About time, Simacro said briskly. As Morty, confirm in-system jump coordinates and prepare to execute.
No, wait, Ciri said urgently. It's not... It's changed. It's a different spot.
What do you mean, a different spot?
Simacro asked.
Where exactly? Do you have the coordinates?
I can't. It's just a little...
Ciri gave a little whimper.
I don't have... I can't!
Simacro muttered something.
Delvu, give me a complete sweep, he said. Find them. Figure out what's changed and where we need to go.
That'll require active sensors, mid-captain, the sensor officer warned.
I know, Simacro growled. But it's either that, or we do the planned jump and hope Skywalker Ciri is wrong.
What if Ciri does the jump?
Thalias spoke up.
What?
Simacro asked, frowning at her.
I asked what if Ciri does the jump,
Thalias repeated, trying not to let her own surprise show. All she'd been planning to do was ask why active sensors would be a problem. Only the other question was the one that had popped into her head, and then out of her mouth.
She's done in-system jumps before,
she told Simacro.
Even if she can't tell Lieutenant Commander Asmordi where he needs to go, maybe she can take us there herself.
Simacro's gaze shifted slightly from her to Ciri.
Skywalker?
He asked.
She learned how to do them when she and Senior Captain Thrawn were exploring the edge of lesser space,
Thalias added, before Ciri could answer.
She told me she...
I asked the Skywalker caregiver, not you,
Simacro cut her off.
Skywalker?
Yes, sir,
Ciri managed, though to Thalias' ears, she didn't sound at all confident.
I think so.
You think so?
I can do it,
Ciri said, sounding more confident now.
That's more like it,
Simacro said.
Asmordi, transfer control.
Yes, sir,
the pilot said, and the helm section of Chiri's board once again lit up as it went active. Ciri hunched her shoulders and set her hands timidly on the controls.
You can do this, Ciri, Thalias murmured. Just take your time. I can't, Ciri murmured back. There isn't any.
She braced herself. Her hands twitched. Abruptly, the view outside changed. Sunrise, which had been too far away to see, now filled nearly a quarter of the starscape. Ahead, Thalias could see the vague shapes of two distant ships near the planet. Between those ships and the Springhawk was a third vessel, driving hard away from the Chiss cruiser and toward the planet.
Combat range! One warship! Dalvo reported. Identification? It's the Aelos!
Thalias frowned at the image of the fleeing ship on the sensor display.
How do you know it's not some other Nicardoon ship? She asked.
Look at the underside, Simacro said, his voice sounding distracted. The multiple snake design?
Right. I see it, Thalia said,
feeling like a fool. The symbol painted on the blockade frigate's ventral surface was subtle, but visible enough from the Springhawk's angle. A nest of small, stylized snakes, with two larger ones curving up from among them, intertwined as they reached toward the ship's bow. It was the emblem of Wingali Foar Mar-Oxa's subclan, matching the double ring Wingali had once given Thrawn for safekeeping, back when the Nicardoon were blockading and threatening his world. So that was Senior Captain Thrawn and the Pakosh, and they were heading straight toward the two unidentified ships.
Are we going to attack? She asked.
Skywalker, do you have further instructions? Simacro asked, ignoring Thalias's question. Skywalker!
There was no answer. Frowning, Thalias looked down to find Chiri slumped in her chair, her eyes closed, her hands lying limp in her lap, her breathing slow and steady.
She's asleep, Mid-Captain, she told him.
I'm not surprised, Simacro said. Fine. When in doubt, follow the leader's lead. Give me calm.
You have calm, Mid-Captain.
Simacro cleared his throat.
Unidentified ships, this is Mid-Captain Simacro of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet Warship Springhawk,
he called in the Ta'arja trade language.
You stand near our prey. Move clear of the Nicardoon blockade frigate Aelos, or suffer the humiliation of becoming collateral damage.
Kilori's only warning was a shout from the sensor officer. He looked back and forth among the displays, his winglets stiffening.
There it was,
directly aft. A fourth warship had joined the three already in the Sunrise system, its thrusters blazing as it drove straight toward them. His winglets stiffened against his cheeks as he grabbed for the controls. There was no time for him to get his headset on, but they might still be able to escape into hyperspace before the ambushing ship behind them opened fire. He didn't know if he could reach out to the great presence with the distraction of sounds and sights in front of him, but he had to at least try. If he let the Aelos get too deep into Sunrise's gravity well, they would be caught between two forces with no way out. He reached for the controls, discovered to his horror that they'd already been disengaged.
Unidentified ships. This is Mid-Captain Simacro of the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet Warship Springhawk.
A voice boomed over the bridge speaker.
You stand near our prey. Move clear of the Nicardoon blockade frigate Aelos, or suffer the humiliation of becoming collateral damage.
Kilori's winglets went completely rigid. The Springhawk really had followed them? That was bad. Very bad. He'd overheard snippets of the calm discussions between Thrawn and the First Officer before they left Rapak. And while he couldn't understand the Chiyun words, it had been clear from the two blueskins' tones that the conversation had been tense. More than that, Thrawn had abandoned his ship, and Kilori knew enough about military cultures to know that such an action was a serious offense. Thrawn had told Wingali he'd sent Simacro and the ship away. Apparently, Simacro had ignored the order. And now he was calling out Thrawn and the Pakosh as his prey?
Full power to the thrusters, Thrawn said calmly.
The Aelos leapt forward, blazing its way toward the Kilji and Grisk warships. Kilori stared out the viewport, wondering what in the depths Thrawn was planning. Was he perhaps
hoping to build up some speed and some distance from the Springhawk, force the bigger and heavier Chiss ship to commit to a pursuit vector, then suddenly veer to the side and angle toward the edge of the gravity well, hoping that the Alos's lower mass and better maneuverability would let them escape? It was worth a try, and if that was the strategy, the ship would need its navigator ready for hyperspace. He picked up his headset, smoothing back his winglets so that they wouldn't be in the way, and got ready to put it on.
You won't need that.
Kilori turned his head. Thrawn was gazing out the viewport at the distant ships and planet, not even sparing a glance in Kilori's direction. Still, it was clear the words had been directed toward him.
Sir?
Kilori asked.
You won't need your headset, Thrawn said. Wingali?
Emergency!
Wingali shouted. Again, Kilori twitched with the sudden noise.
The Chiss have arrived, and our weapons are still non-functional. We are in desperate need of a safe haven.
You may approach, Nikhardun,
the earlier voice said, now almost purring with anticipation.
Draw the Chiss to us and to their doom.
You will not regret this,
Wingali said.
Even now, we work with frantic zeal to repair our weapons. By the time we reach your safe haven, your battle line will have the mighty Nikhardun standing as a part of it.
We will be ever so grateful to add the strength of your mighty weapons to our own,
the other said, a thick layer of sarcasm coloring the anticipation in his voice.
You may take up position to port side of the Kilji warship Hammer. Make haste, that we may face this threat together.
There was a double tone as the comm was shut down.
Kilori took a careful breath. At least now he'd finally figured out the plan. Mid-Captain Simakro wasn't genuinely angry with Thrawn, nor was he planning to attack him. Simakro was merely playing a role for the Kilji's and Grisk's benefit, persuading them that the Nikhardun ship was in danger. Once Thrawn and the Pakash were inside the Hammer's point defenses, they would open fire on it at point-blank range. The hope would be that they could incapacitate it before it could do any damage, while the Springhawk similarly attacked the Grisk ship. It was a bold plan, he had to admit. It was also a huge and dangerous gamble. Kilori had seen enough battles from the bridge of General Yiv's flagship to realize that while the Springhawk was probably only slightly less powerful than the Grisk warship awaiting it, the Alos was far outmatched by the Kilji picket cruiser they were racing toward. Even if Thrawn could get in the first shot, and the second, third, and fourth as well, the Pakosh would probably be overwhelmed.
Tell me, are you proficient with weapons? Thrawn asked.
Kilori's winglets rippled. What kind of question was that? Surely he wasn't inviting Kilori to take over the weapons console, was he?
No, not at all, he said. I'm a navigator, not an armaments expert.
I know, Thrawn said. I was asking about hand weaponry, not shipboard.
And with a jolt of stiffened winglets, Kilori finally understood. Thrawn wasn't going to get in close to the Kilji picket cruiser and trade spectrum laser shots. He and the Pakosh were going to board it.
No, I'm not,
he managed. No, surely Thrawn wasn't thinking of dragging him into the middle of their attack.
The Navigators Guild forbids us from carrying sidearms.
That also wasn't what I asked, Thrawn said. But no matter. The Pakosh and I will protect you.
You can't do this, sir!
Kilori begged, the winglets now vibrating at high speed.
If the guild ever found out that I was involved in a military action, I would be instantly expelled!
I think they're likely to be more charitable toward you than that,
Thrawn said.
Certainly once they learn your involvement was solely to help rescue a fellow Pathfinder.
Kilori stared at him.
To rescue?
Commander, they have us in a tractor beam.
The pilot cut in.
Maintain course,
Wingali said.
Do not attempt to break free, Senior Captain Thrawn.
They want to control our approach,
Thrawn said, stepping to Wingali's side and studying the helm and sensor displays.
Do you have an origination point?
The outer edge of the port side shoulder weapons cluster,
the pilot told him, pointing to a partial schematic of the hammer that had now appeared on one of the displays.
Near the midship's docking port,
Wingali commented.
I expect their plan is to park us right at the tractor projector,
Thrawn said.
That will position us directly beneath the weapons cluster, where we'll be out of position to damage it.
And put us far enough from the docking port that we won't have easy or immediate access to their ship,
Wingali added.
Indeed,
Thrawn said.
I think we can modify their plan somewhat.
I think we may.
Wingali agreed, with dark amusement.
Weapons? Bar Kriplanet is ready for deployment,
one of the other Pakosh confirmed. Kilori looked at the weapons display, trying without success to decipher the unfamiliar Pakian script. Kriplanet? What kind of weapon could that be? He had no idea, but the orange marker that had just begun flickering seemed to be located in or near one of the Alos's forward missile tubes. Was a Kriplanet some kind of Chiss missile he'd never heard about?
Prepare to launch on my signal,
Thrawn said. He looked at Kilori, and it seemed to him that the Chiss almost smiled.
Don't be concerned, Pathfinder.